From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 10th day of December, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll hear about a disruptor in the farm operating loan sector, and we'll take a look at the weather forecast, that last one with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today settled at $5.90. That was a penny and three quarters of a cent lower. The May futures at $5.92, down one and a quarter. And December contract at $5.51, a penny and a quarter lower. January soybeans for Friday at $12.67 and three quarters of a cent, up 3¼ cents per bushel. The March contract at $12.74 and a quarter, two higher. And November beans for next year up one at $12.48 and three quarters. The bean meal at $3.66.80, up $7.10. Bean oil $1.16 lower at $53.69. Wheat futures soft red up 8.5 cents at $7.85 and a quarter. The hard red at 8.05 and a half, up nine. Both of those in the lead March contracts. Taking a look at the live cattle futures from Chicago, nearby contract at 138.75 cents, up 27.5 cents. Feeder cattle at $164.87 and a half, 80 cents higher for 100 pounds, and lean hogs up $3.20. They settled at $81.02 and a half. Gold futures for the day at $1,782.20, up $5.50. The crude oil at $71.84 a barrel, 90 cents higher. Diesel fuel or heating oil about 0.7 cents higher, $2.25 and 0.7 cents per gallon. And the wholesale price of gasoline up $0.015 for the day at $2.14 and 0.3. Mike Zuzulo now joins us from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, to discuss the marketplace. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Todd. How are you today?
You know, I'm doing really well. I've got some questions for you today. I know you and I talk about wheat more often than not than we do on the rest of the program. I'm a little concerned that wheat has had kind of a rough week while the rest of the marketplace seems to have been okay. But I don't know whether that concern is misplaced or not.
No, I think it is. I mean, this is where the wheat and the crude oil and the copper, I really do feel like they're kind of the three major commodities that are the canaries for what's going on with the currency markets and what's going on with the trade issues and bilateral trade, whether it's U.S.-China, U.S.-Russia, or U.S. Middle East and U.S. Iran. So I think it's an excellent indicator for the sentiment of the market, and the fact that we have pulled back about a dollar in the soft red wheat minus corn spread and about a dollar and a quarter in the Paris wheat market. And then the fact that Saudi Arabia, I should say, came in and bought well over the expected amount of wheat, beating the 500,000 metric ton expectation, going well over 600,000 metric tons for a purchase earlier this week. All that suggests to me that we've probably gone low enough to find the demand again, and that these overbought conditions in the monthly chart should mean less than what they normally do. So it is a critical time period for the wheat. The wheat still is the leader, in my opinion, especially the leader in terms of the commodity inflation mindset and sentiment. And I think it's especially important now that we've gotten through the EPA biofuel policy, we think. We've gotten through the USDA WASDE report. We've seen China change their monetary policy. Now we have the Federal Reserve next week. So I think we're laying into a situation, Todd, where next week could drive the next 3 weeks of trade until that big January WASDE report.
And so are you feeling better about this marketplace in this case? And given that the spread has narrowed down, is it more in line than it was?
Yes, I'm feeling better from a standpoint that USDA came in and cut that Chinese soybean production number and by 2.6 million tons, cut Paraguay by 500,000 tons. And we got the CPI, the Consumer Price Index numbers, that came in at the highest level since 1982. All these things have been concerns of mine. And sentiment momentum-wise, this goes back to what I just said about the wheat. We shouldn't need to stimulate a sell signal on the wheat and break lower, because fundamentals, including the South American weather, should dictate or suggest to me anyway that if the beans are going higher, corn and wheat should want to go higher as well. I was astounded come the close today that the bean-corn ratio for the new crop hit a three-week high of 2.27. So if beans are going higher, especially new crop beans, and natural gas is going higher and the dollar's going lower, so on and so forth, it takes pressure off of the wheat market by itself and the momentum stochastic indicators in particular.
Enough production in southern Brazil, Paraguay, and parts of Argentina to really make a difference? That's the drier area.
Yeah, right. No, I think it is, especially 30 days from now. I'm not going to get really beefed up and real eager to jump into the long side of soybeans at these price levels in the next 15, 20 days. What I really want to see is next week come through. What I really want to see, Todd, is the Dees corn, the 21 corn, before it goes off the board next week, close above 589.5. I mean, we tested it, I think, four or five times this week, and that's our major resistance on the weekly chart. And if you get above that level on a weekly close, you really don't have a lot of resistance until 611, and then another resistance around 620, 624. So this is where I think the bean market and the bean report this week, I hope, follows through. That the sellers don't want to come in. We get the Federal Reserve underneath us, and then all of a sudden the commodity inflation bull wants to take it up one more time.
Yeah, so is that a sign that you'll want to market the finish of the old crop corn?
Yes, and this is a great question because I think we talked about this. I've been a put buyer and holding corn in storage. I'm switching that strategy, and I'll talk about that more in detail this weekend with the clients and subscribers on the newsletter update, but essentially our basis levels are moving higher. The futures has moved higher to the point where it's a good price, and it may be wise to start looking at letting go of the unlimited risk bushels in the bin and replacing those with kind of deferred calls like July, or even move out to December 22 futures for reownership in case we stay dry in South America, in case we don't get the fertilizer supplies that we need this spring, which I think is still a real possibility. And another 30 days from now, like the South American weather, if we don't have any good news about fertilizer, that possibility of not getting the supplies becomes a probability, I think.
What are you hearing about acreage from your clientele as it pertains to corn and soybeans for 2022?
Yeah, really important question there, because it's narrowing down from my standpoint. The double crop corn producers are going more beans. The corn bean rotation people are going ahead and booking $1,500 anhydrous. And, you know, going to assume $120 more of cost per acre in next year's corn. So I think we are probably going to stay above 90 million acres in corn because of that bean corn ratio and guys having pre-bought some of their fall anhydrous needs. But it's going to be hard to get above 90. So I'd say 90, 90 and a half would be a comfortable number for me.
And what does that do in terms of what you're thinking about pricing then? Does corn continue to be lifted?
Yeah, I mean, this is where the corn probably continues to have the least amount of downside unless there's a major policy shift in Washington or another country. But, you know, China gave us a huge gift this week, in my opinion, Todd. We just didn't get it priced into the market because of all the other things going on. But when they lowered their reserve requirement at their banks for a second time this year, that's stimulus, that's liquidity, and that should really show up in some inflationary pressures in about 2 months. So I think the trade should probably need to swing back and look at that. And I think that really gives the corn some support. Mexico had that big purchase. I still think China's in play for getting some increased purchases from us here probably in the next 30 days.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Up next, a newcomer to the farm operating loan space, and they expect to be a bit of a disruptor. I caught up with Dan Potts. He's the Vice President of Risk Management for FarmOp Capital at FarmOp.com, and asked him just exactly what FarmOp might be.
FarmOp Capital is a new lender out in the ag states, focusing on some of the gaps that are out there for farmers. So a couple of things that are happening in the industry is as farmers get larger, their balance sheets get smaller because they're renting more acres. And it's been tougher to get the financing that they need. Well, our model is more focused on the production of the crop itself. And we really take a look at the crop insurance policies the hedging that the farmer has in place, and then the crop plan and budget to do the primary focus of our underwriting rather than a traditional look at a balance sheet. So we're trying to offer higher advance rates, more money, more capital on the farm at an earlier time during the season.
Tell me more about this, because if you're looking at the crop insurance and their risk management function altogether, things, if they're using options or crop insurance that are guaranteed, is that how you're guaranteeing or underwriting?
Yeah.
Underwriting the loan?
Absolutely. You're looking toward the right concept. So we're trying to look at on the underwriting side what the farmer is capable of producing, and then anticipating a known outcome in the future. And so with those two safety nets of hedging and crop insurance, it helps provide a better opportunity for the farmer early on to get a little bit of a higher advance rate on the farm.
So why would they want to do that? I mean, what is it on the farmer side that would say to them, I need more money and I can guarantee it through a different manner than I normally would? A
couple examples. So currently with the super inflation buzzwords that are out there, we're concerned that when the farmer sees their traditional bank, that they may not be able to offer more capital to keep up with that. Perhaps there be some opportunities where the bank will be able to do that, where when we look at our model, we can incorporate that process in there to overcome maybe a shortage. And what that shortage then leads to, as the second example, is they may be underfunded. So if they ask for $100, they may get $50, $65, $70, leaving a third-party credit need to finance the rest of the farm, or go unfinanced and make desperational rather than inspirational decisions, right?
Are you involved then in some of the risk management as it relates to options? Maybe not crop insurance, but it might be at what crop insurance levels, I suppose.
Yeah, excellent question. So at FarmOp, we maintain an independent status, right? We have the right to work with the farmers, persons that they have already in place, their trusted advisor network, including their crop insurance agent stays put, their hedging person stays put. We do have some relationships with CTAs that if they want to look at another option, they can. But as far as that, FarmOp doesn't offer or sell crop insurance. We don't offer or sell any of the CTA options or platforms. We try to maintain an independent status and just really focus on the capital on the farm on the operating loan side.
But to be clear, it would require that crop insurance and some option risk management strategy are in place?
Yep, it's a significant a moment for the financeable equity of the loan. There has been circumstances where if they're not real open to the hedging concept and the loan is easily offered based on the crop insurance piece, that has happened before. But for the most part, to get the ideal amount of capital, those two things are always in place on our loans.
Yeah, so I was just thinking about timing on this, because the operating loan would need to be in place well before the crop insurance numbers would be set. So I assume that the risk management has to be done with options to begin with, and then crop insurance is incidental or subsidizes the back end of that.
Yep. So we watch a couple of things in terms of the crop insurance contracts as well, right? Looking at the December and November contracts for corn and beans, and we use some estimated numbers to get the loan out the door. If the loan, you know, if that number is increased, there's an opportunity for maybe an accordion during the year to accommodate that rise. If the number is decreased, then we can simply look at where they've hedged, and so that floor is in place. So we can get a really good projection now. And in fact, because of that, over half of our book is already renewed. This year, they have 22 operating funds to lock in those prices for extra nitrogen, et cetera. Those are skyrocketing out of control right now. So having that ability to be paying down their 21 loan and then having new funds to get to 22 has certainly helped. And so a lot of our current book has taken advantage of getting renewed, even as early as September.
How do they find out more information if they're interested?
Yeah, you can reach out at FarmOp Capital. So our website is farmop.com, and there's a couple of contact forms that are out there. And then we have local and regional salespeople around the area that you can reach out to as well.
John Blockman is one of the regional salespeople in this area?
Illinois.
You're in Illinois?
I am Illinois, located central Illinois, from the Champaign area, live in Bloomington, Normal, take care of the entire state of Illinois.
And for those who are listening in Indiana, they'd have somebody else that they would deal with, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so once they make this contact, and they're visiting the website, I assume, first, once they make the contact, what happens?
I come out to the farm, have a formal introduction, see how the operation is operating, and seeing what needs are, and just, you know, keep the communication going.
That was John Blockman. He's a regional finance manager for the state of Illinois for Farm Op Capital. You can find out more about Farm Op Capital at farmop.com. We were also joined by the vice president of risk management at Farm Op, Dan Potts. On this Friday, let's check the agricultural weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again.
The last time we talked, you said December was going to be pretty active. Well, we've had another week. Is that still the case?
It is. You know, it started off relatively, well, let me rephrase that. It started off as a blowtorch. We had just a couple of cooler days in there, but otherwise it's gone back over warm. But the pattern is what I'm interested in, and the pattern is really going over to an active time period right now. So we got this big Colorado low that's coming out of Colorado. It's going to go straight towards Chicago today on Friday. And so what that's going to do is that's going to put us in the warm sector, and that's going to put us where we have the risk of some thunderstorms today, especially in southern Illinois and then on down to the lower Mississippi River Valley. There could be a pretty nasty line of storms that rolls through there tonight on Friday night. So this system gets, I mean, get this, it's going to go today in Colorado to tomorrow afternoon, it'll be in Quebec. So this thing is moving fast across the country. And it's going to spread some snow from Wyoming through Nebraska into Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and into Michigan. Quite a bit of snow in some of those places. And that snow is going to be very, very short-lived. So folks that maybe you're listening to you online from there, go out and take a picture of it because it's going to go really, really mild again next week. So this pattern is just volatile right now.
Yeah, so you've got us through this week, next week. What happens after, I don't know, next week, through the middle of January or so?
Yeah, so this pattern right now, it is set through, I think, almost through the beginning of the week of Christmas. And so what that means is we're going to go, like you said, into next week, and the temperatures could be 20 to 35 degrees above average across the midsection of the United States. But what I'm watching carefully is what's going on in the west, because we're expecting a deep trough to dig into the west by middle of or early next week, and it's going to put down maybe 4 to 6 feet of snow in the Sierra Nevada mountains. I mean, it's really going to hit the west pretty hard. Well, that's a signal for a bit of a pattern change for us, because remember, we started off December mild and dry, and what's happening now is as we go from that time frame like December 20th to January 20th, we're going to have a very active storm track out of the Mid-South. So just think from Oklahoma and Arkansas straight through the Ohio River Valley. And therefore, we're going to be put into this position where we're seeing a weather system come through, you know, every, I don't know, 3 to 5 days that's going to really bring in some strong winds like the one we're going to get here in the next couple of days, or the next the next 36 hours. And then also, I expect that time period to really start to bring in some cold air. So I am not right now anticipating a mild end to this month or a mild start to January. There's some cold air locked up in Canada that's on its way here.
Interesting enough. We've been talking about La Nina. What impact?
Yeah, so La Nina right now has plateaued. In other words, we don't see the ocean temperatures continue to get colder, and that tells me that the trade winds are starting to shift around. So if we have a fading La Nina, what tends to happen is December, most of it mild for our area. And then, like we've already talked about that, but then what happens is as the La Nina starts to fade, we allow things to shift around in the tropics to let a bunch of cold air through. So January into February, there's pretty good indications that we're going to have multiple events where we get some cold air outbreaks because of that shifting La Nina. So like I've been saying all along, I think this is going to be a pretty active year, and this is going to be a good year for snow for much of Illinois.
In South America, what conditions are producers and the crops growing under there?
Yeah, so southern Brazil is our first kind of problem area, especially in Rio Grande do Sul. And just so you understand, you could fit almost two Illinois inside of Rio Grande do Sul. So down there, they've had problems with regional drought development. And then as you go there south to Uruguay, then over to Argentina, especially along what we call the Paraná River, that's an area that has been dry and is forecast to be dry, not only now, but for quite some time. And that's quite common to have drought concerns in Argentina and in southern Brazil when there is a La Nina. Northern Brazil's growing areas, though, look to be wet. Eastern Brazil looks to be wet. And the big concern will be in the northern growing areas is when the safrinha crop goes in, and Todd, we'll be talking about that in about 5 or 6 weeks, right? When that safrinha crop goes in, the question will be, do they run out of moisture early? Because sometimes La Niñas tend to make that happen for that safrinha crop in the north.
I'll be looking forward to those conversations. So will the marketplace. Hey, thank you, Eric.
You're welcome.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible, joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. Find us online, listen to us on demand at WILLAG.org.